time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
People have been saying there are too many mutual funds since the 80s. For all the talk of smart beta, they haven't pulled in huge assets. The active managers are showing up in the ETF space.
Drew, great having you back on the show. It feels like it's been a little while.
Yeah, it has. Thanks, Nate. Hi, Connor. Always a pleasure to be on.
All right, so FactSet's Elizabeth Kashner wrote this piece last week on ETF launches and closures. This got a lot of run. I saw it all over social media. For listeners, you can find it at ETF.com. But Drew, let's start with maybe the most important question, which is, should investors be concerned with the rising number of ETF closures? So there were over 150 last year.
Well, just kind of delineate closures. Last week we saw Invesco wrap up some 20 funds that they closed. And a lot of the big issuers will do an annual calling of the herd, if you will. In fact, we saw WisdomTree announce also last week in mid-March they're going to close, I believe, 8 ETFs. So you have this sort of the big issuers kind of weeding, and then you have issuers like Impact and Ethan, which will be interesting to listen to, who are coming on the scene, who are really trying to, you know, sell something that's new. And that's the biggest hill to climb, is a small issuer coming on and with a great idea, as Connor mentioned. These are these very specific, laser-focused kind of things. But what we're also seeing is, of all the successful launches now, are really either bespoken products, which means somebody's asking for that, or we're seeing a lot of wealth managers coming into the ETF space with their own money. So there's kind of two different environments now. Now, you go back to 2011, we had some 300 launches and only 33 closures. I mean, that was really the kind of the mark in my eyes. And you know, even last year, we had less launches than we had in 2017 and more closures. So that gap is definitely closing. However, I also think sometimes it's a little bit skewed when you have someone like Invesco closing 20. And Invesco closed 20 because they just purchased of last year Guggenheim, which was an ETF issuer, as well as Oppenheimer funds that they recently purchased. And a lot of the funds they closed were Guggenheim funds, could have been overlap funds, et cetera. And we see it typically in the summer from State Street and iShares. They'll do the same thing. There'll be just one large swath of closures for whatever reason. But then again, you have the one-offs. It's very difficult to get over $50 million in AUM in your first year. I think 80% of the launches last year had $50 million or less. So it is a tough hill to climb, and we're also seeing investors just frankly going to the big established broad-based funds from Vanguard, from iShares. And whether that's advisors putting clients in there or people are just naturally gravitating to Vanguard. So that's another kind of a marketing thing that I really don't know how a small issuer can break that into a distribution model, get on TD Ameritrade or get on Schwab platform. So those are the distribution really is a big key.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that, because you know, I said earlier that ultimately investors decide which ETFs will be successful, and I do think that's largely true, but investors have to know a product exists. And there was a great piece in Barron's a couple of weeks ago from Crystal Kim. It was titled "The ETF Industry's Biggest Problem and How to Fix It." And she wrote about how, because ETFs don't offer financial incentives like mutual funds to facilitate their distribution, it can be really tough for ETFs to get on brokerage platforms or large advisory platforms, especially for smaller ETF providers. So do you agree this is one of the industry's biggest problems? And if so, I mean, what is the solution here?
Well, I think small issuers have to understand, and you know, just basic market research. You know, before you launch a product, who's going to buy it? If you just build it and you hope they come, that's not a great, you know, hope is not a great strategy, right? So I think it is, but at the same token, we do see successes. You know, Hack came along at the right time at the, you know, in during the cybersecurity problems we were having, people related to that. We have the marijuana ETF, for however you feel about it. People understand that, and it's got $1 billion now, which I wouldn't have believed if you told me that 5 years ago. So I think that innovation will pop up, but it's certainly not going to be the majority of innovation that succeeds. It's always, you know, a smaller percent than that. And I do think the distribution thing is a big deal, because a lot of platforms, you need a three-year track record. You have to have so much in AUM. So it's kind of another big hill to climb for a small new issuer.
I think along with that, something I think a lot about is this chicken or egg problem with assets. So unless a fund company is bringing their own assets to the table, an ETF has to start from scratch, right, and work its way up. Now, that's fine. That's the way it should be. But it feels like so many investors and advisors have a basic screen on assets under management, that even if an ETF is really compelling, if it doesn't have assets, nobody will invest. Any solution here?
Well, again, I would go back to market research. I mean, do you have people that are going to purchase this product? And that's what we've seen out of the nine ETFs launched in 2018 that hit the $1 billion mark in its first year. Seven of those came from bespoke products and clients like firms like J.P. Morgan taking their clients, and some of them new into ETFs rather than putting them into mutual funds that are pretty much mirrored on a lot of these firms. So I think it's, you know, again, the launches that are successful have a built-in, again, as Eric at Bloomberg says, bring your own assets, BYOA. Those are the ones that are succeeding. Now, you do have certain funds that will, you know, pop out of nowhere for some reason, whether it be news cycle, whether it just be a good timing. But it is, again, I think we're seeing a different way of ETFs being launched, and the rate of closure is just a natural evolution when you have 2,200 ETFs, 150 or 250 new being launched every year. I think it is healthy, because if a fund doesn't have any assets, isn't trading well, but might sound good, you know, the investor is going to get hit with the trading spread. It's going to get potentially stuck in a fund that will close if it doesn't crack $3-4 million in the first year.
How much do you think the increasing amount of ETF closures is simply fee driven? And look, falling fees are obviously good for investors, but they do make it extremely difficult for fund companies. So how big of a factor do you think that is in ETF closures?
I think it's a factor. I think the theme is obviously a factor. But as we've seen between iShares, Vanguard, and State Street, they've taken the majority of the AUM in the industry. I think it's 75% every year. And they have very established funds that have, you know, good relationships with advisors, and they are on platforms. So once you kind of build that house, if you will, and people start coming in, they stay. And then they become more familiar with the tried and true. A lot of people understand the broad market. You know, they understand the S&P 500. They understand being in a tech or whatever. So I think those established funds that have established themes that people understand are just going to continue to take more and more assets, and it's just going to be tougher for smaller issuers. And we've just seen Invesco by Guggenheim and by Oppenheimer funds. So if anything, maybe we start seeing consolidation, and we had seen some of the, I would say, mid to smaller issues have been purchased. Hartford funds bought Lattice, if you recall. Global X was purchased recently, although they're keeping their brand name. So I think there's some of that going on, too. And I think it's just the evolution of the industry. As I said, look back at 2011, 300 launches, 33 closures at the height of, you know, the real bursting of the ETF, not bubble, but ETF growth and innovation. And today we're just seeing, like I said, calling of the herd. You know, every new theme is not going to work, because a lot of investors, as Connor mentioned, don't understand it, even though we do. And that's always a difficult thing. It's our job to help people educate and inform them about, you know, new ETFs, like the impact shares. What are they really trying to achieve, and what's behind the hood?
Drew, as you mentioned, there are over 2,200 ETFs now available to investors. Obviously, all of the major asset classes are covered. I would say many of the more niche areas of the market are covered as well. You mentioned something like marijuana ETFs earlier. Where does the innovation come from moving forward? Where do you think ETF issuers can find success?
Well, it depends who the issuer is. I'll give you an example. John Hancock, they saw one of their funds, JHEM, last week, double its AUM. It's a multi-factor emerging market fund. So I think in terms of innovation, I think sometimes it's not so much innovation, it's just new players coming to the market. And I would bet with the Hancock fund, that's probably some internal money, or it's money that somebody is working directly with John Hancock, is not going to TD Ameritrade and looking at all the ETFs that are available. So I think it's a little bit more of an institutional thing going on. And I think that's really the next leg of growth, is institutional investors embracing ETFs or using their current asset managers to create ETFs just to make it cheaper. And I think the awareness out there now that you can get the market basically for free, I think 3 basis points on a Schwab S&P 500 fund, and 1% or more in a mutual fund, I think people are investors are much more sensitive to that now than they were, say, 10, 15 years ago.
All right, Drew, we have just a few minutes left here. Let's briefly talk about ETF closures from an investor's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any red flags you think investors can use to spot ETFs that might be at risk for closure?
Well, two things. I would say, one, is it a new issuer? If iShares launches something, they're less likely to be closing it in a year for whatever reason. Either they know there's a market for it, or they know they have the distribution model to provide something like an active short-term bond fund, right? But I think low assets under management is something investors should pay attention to beyond, you know, what the price of the ETF is. If you get into a fund, and you should know right going in that only having a couple million dollars in a fund is a red flag, and that's tough for a new issuer that's coming in with a ETF that's seeded with only $2 million. It takes a long time to get to that $50 million range, and even at that, a lot of advisors are a little wary of that size of AUM. And I think you have to look at the trade volume. Are people actually trading this thing? A lot of short-term funds may not have a lot of money in it, but they're being traded a lot. I mean, they might have $100 million versus $1 billion, but they're trading a lot. So that is a big red flag. And I think it's also just how the fund is performing, right? People chase performance. You have a new fund and it's going down, I mean, that's a red flag. But I also think that it's very simple for investors to see what the assets under management of an ETF is, whether on ETF.com or any fund report. And I think that's really a key. And once you see funds starting to build momentum, I think we saw, not keep referring to this, but the marijuana fund, MJ, I think it has over $600-700 million in new assets this year alone. You know, the risk thought maybe when it first converted to being a marijuana-based ETF, there was some thought this is not going to work. Clearly, it's working.
All right, Drew, lastly, in the event an ETF does close, do you want to quickly talk about the process here? Because I always think it's important to point out you don't lose your investment, right? Your money doesn't just go away. But there are some considerations here.
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways, right? You either sell when you hear it's going to close. And investors should be paying attention. It's not a secret that these things are going to close. For instance, WisdomTree said last week, in a month, we're going to close these 8 funds. But if you sit in it, you'll end up getting your investment back based on the net asset value of the fund, which is going to realize capital gains. And it could realize capital gains if you sell the shares. So that's the one sort of tax hurdle you see in the ETF industry, because you know, they're very much more tax efficient because of creation redemption than mutual funds. But when it closes, it's a cash out. So it's either wait for it to be sent to you. And the problem, if you wait, obviously when a fund closes, most people will bail on it pretty quickly. But a lot don't. So, I mean, the issue there is just paying attention to your investment and understanding that, no, you're not going to lose your money, but you are going to get a potential capital gains tax hit.
Well, Drew, we'll have to leave it there. Always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us today.
You bet, Nate. Thanks, Connor.
That was ETF.com's Drew Voris.